And now some important words from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, an engagement of services to be offered, and only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registry.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Well, you know, I will use a big word now and then. Nothing too big, hopefully. All right. So, good show today. Here we go. We're going to talk about, you know, we're getting close to tax season. Companies will be sending out their W-2s, and it's an exciting time of year where we get to take a look at what we made and say, where'd all that go? And we have to file our taxes. So that means we need to make sure we do it correctly because we don't want to be audited. So on the show today, I'm going to talk about how to avoid putting up that red flag that may alert the IRS that you've not done something correctly. We're also going to talk about in our two-minute warning segment about how Iran can affect your wallet, some of the tensions that are building in the Middle East, how that could potentially affect you financially. But before we do, we have to get to
the fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
The man, the myth, the legend. There he is.
Cha-ching.
Get her done.
I love that. All right. Well, Wednesday's market was another flat one, just really not much happening. Dow Jones was down 13 points. S&P was virtually flat at 1292.
That's sweet. I mean, you say, golly, a loss. Well, 13 points, it's a blip.
Yeah, it's
and
okay.
I'll take the 73 up, 13 back and forth like that. We'll take that all the time.
I saw things in Wednesday's market that I didn't like, most notably a 10-year U.S. Treasury auction that came in at a yield of 1.9, bid to cover of 3, which means that for every dollar the government took in, they could have had 3, which says that there's a lot of demand for Treasury, which says there's a lot of demand for safety. But anyway, getting back to Wednesday's market, euro dipped below $1.27 versus the greenback. We've been talking about the Europe a lot. A new 16-month low there today as the ECB, the European Central Bank, was urged by Fitch to start buying debt to prevent a cataclysmic collapse of the euro. That's kind of talking about your big words.
That's serious.
Yeah, that one will tie you up. Cataclysmic collapse of the euro. France has been informed that they are not going to be immediately downgraded from a AAA.
So they get a pass this year.
They get a pass. They can just keep on going, paying their three and change on their 10-year while we pay 190 and have worse credit rating than them. But I'm not bitter about it. Thursday's market, big things to watch Thursday's market, which fly below the radar for most media, but bond auctions in Spain and Italy. Very, very little economic output on Wednesday's market. We did get the beige book from the Fed. The beige book is nothing more than the 12 federal banks go out into their general areas and they say to business owners, how's it going? That's really all it is. They put it all back into this book called the beige book, and the result is that the economy is growing moderately.
Modest to moderate.
Nothing really to get too excited about.
We'll dig into the report, and we may have more for our listeners tomorrow.
Yeah, there's always interesting stuff in there, and they really break it down to a very, very granular level of detail. So I'm sure there's a lot in there that's worth talking about. In corporate news, Dell said that they are going to launch their first tablet in late 2012. They actually have a tablet out now, but it's not for consumers. It's not for retail consumers. Coke and Pepsi both declined on Wednesday's market after UBS cut the rating on both beverage giants to a neutral from a buy. Big loser on Wednesday's market, Urban Outfitter plunged really significantly after Citigroup cut the price target from $34 to $20 and the CEO hit the road.
That'll do it.
That's a big news. And then we talked about the ETF that reflects the housing market and builders specifically earlier this week. Lennar announced earnings Wednesday. The earnings weren't so great, but they did have a very, very high gain in new orders. So maybe there's some demand coming back to the market. Lennar hit a 52-week high on Wednesday's market. So pretty big news there. Thursday's market, we'll see jobless claims and retail sales, as well as a 30-year bond auction. Friday's market, we'll be looking for consumer sentiment numbers from the University of Michigan and earnings from J.P. Morgan.
Well, you mentioned the a little bit more about Europe, and we're going to be talking about it for a while now. But
maybe years.
Yeah.
Really, maybe years.
Don't tell them that, Scott. They're not going to listen. We'll talk about it now and then, but we're going to talk about it today. And, you know, before we started the show, you share with me, we were talking before we got going here, that really Italy now is coming into focus. Is that, I mean, that's
yeah,
really...
Yeah, they have a huge auction coming up. If they're paying over 7%, that's an unsustainable rate.
They're 7.1, 7.2 right now,
yeah,
right?
And they're pounding the table. They're saying, well, we're putting austerity in, and we're shrinking our deficit, and we're shrinking our debt. Okay, but the economy's not growing. It hasn't grown in 10 years. They don't talk about that. They have to grow their way out. It's the only way.
You know what? That really is what we need Washington to hear. That's it right there, Scott. We need Washington to hear that the only... I kept thinking about that over... the last weekend, I kept running that through my mind going, you know, to get out of the debt and at least to, number one, to stop the bleeding and then start to chip away at the debt, there's only one way out.
Yeah, Italy is shrinking their deficit. They are shrinking their public spending. Their tax receipts are going up. But at the same time, all of their interest rates are going up because the market says, that's all terrific, but if the economy doesn't grow and your economy hasn't grown in 10 years... What's really for us to be excited about?
See, if we could do that here, we could be well back on a road to recovery, a strong recovery.
Yeah, it's reasonable for us to expect, I think, maybe a 2.5% to 3% GDP growth, sustainable, if we could just kind of get things moving.
Well, the Italian government, they just can't sustain this kind of interest rate, especially if things aren't growing. Now, back to some of the other hot spots in Europe. The Greek deficit went way over. They went over there. Required maximum they could spend, and that's caused all kinds of chattering going on about whether or not they can meet their numbers.
Yeah, well, they have a huge bond payment due in March, and if they don't get these certain things in place, the Europeans are not going to give them the money to make that bond payment.
Right, so that'll be, I think one of the reports I read, they called it, what was it, they called it, here it is, they called it, Wall Street Journal, they called it a, if they don't get the restructuring done, then they're going to have a messy default.
Right, which is really what I think what makes people nervous. So to be specific, they were supposed to get their deficit to 9% of GDP. It's at 9.6. There are inspectors going into Greece next week that are going to dig into the numbers. We may find out it's actually worse than that. And eventually, the European powers that be are going to say, we can't give you any more money. You know, it's like if you keep lending money to a family member, they never pay you back. You're not going to continue to lend to them.
All right. Well, I can't give you more time either. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll pick up a little bit of this and then get into our Finglish to English segment.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelations inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read will find you clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And that's what we're going to do, break it down for us. You know, I want to talk a little bit about the report that came out, Scott, on consumer borrowing. But before we do, I had something I wanted to get in your 5 minutes, and we never got to it. And it's about Hostess. Hostess is declaring bankruptcy, and they're going into Chapter 11. So that's the reorganization type of bankruptcy.
That they just came out of.
What was it, 2 years ago?
2009, they just came out of Chapter 11.
So they're going into, so these are the folks, if you're not familiar with Hostess, they're the ones that make the Twinkie, and they're going into bankruptcy protection. And a lot of it has to do with massive pension obligations that they have.
Yeah, they have almost $1 billion in pension debt.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. $994 million in pension debt. That's to the Bakery and Confectionery Union. 83% of their employees are union members.
Do you know that they crank out over half a billion? Speaking of billion with a B, they produce 500 million Twinkies every year.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of Twinkies. Anyway, I ran across that. And there was also a guy who did a teacher that did a study on how long, you know, the Twinkie would last, and he hung it up somewhere, and it's still hanging up. It's been 30 years, and it still hasn't broken down. So
yeah. Anyway. But, you know, they're actually running a decent business there from a revenue and expense standpoint, other than that pension is just burying them.
Well, I think a lot of companies are looking at that and having to really reevaluate, as we talked about this a little bit before we started the show, Scott. The problem is twofold. One, people are simply living longer, and the companies are not getting the investment return that helps to support the pension. Because what a lot of people overlook is a pension, there's two main types of retirement plans that companies can offer. A defined contribution plan, which is a 401k, 403b, 457, all that stuff. Defined contribution, the company puts in a specific dollar amount, and the outcome is up to the investments and what the employee puts in. A defined benefit plan, which is your typical pension, is where the company says, okay, we're going to give you X and we'll put the money in to make that happen. And if the investment returns are not high enough or aren't what they expect, guess who has to make up the difference? The company.
Right, and we're talking about 10 years of a flat market with probably a 5 or 6% annual return expectation. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not. So now, speaking of sustainable or sustainability, and that's not a big word, I'm going to stay away from those big words. Consumers stepped up their borrowing here recently toward the end of 2011, and it could be a good trend, could indicate people are spending more and getting bullish, or it might not be so good. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting number. Most of the numbers that we get, you can really say either that's a good number or that's a bad number. This number is very much different because it could be seen that consumers borrowing more is a good sign for demand and willingness to spend and things like that.
Credit cards like it.
Now, only it's only a portion of what we're talking about as far as consumer credit that's actually revolving credit. Quite a bit of it is also student loans and auto loans, and that's a whole other thing. But the other side of that coin, particularly with this number, is that it could show that reserves are gone and clients are borrowing to survive. And the problem that I have with this number is that it does not come with an increase in income. Income is flat. Borrowing is up. I don't think that's a good trend.
So what we can hope as we kind of translate this and think about it is we hope it's a sign that people are saying, okay, I'm feeling more even if I don't have a lot of growth in my income yet, I'm feeling more confident about the economy, so I'm going to go buy this or I'm going to go buy that and use credit to do it.
Right, they feel their job is stable. They feel like they'll have income for the next foreseeable future years or you know, some reason to spend. Now, on top of that, if you add in the non-revolving credit, which are student loans, that goes back to something we've talked about a number of times, meaning you have to retrain the worker and make sure that we have the right workforce in place to fill jobs as they come open. And also auto loans, and we've talked about how auto sales have increased quite a bit. A good portion of that number is auto loan.
That's a good point. So as car sales have ramped up for 2011, that's probably part of what's going on there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who are traditionally cash car buyers are actually financing now because rates are so low. And it's nothing to even get a zero car loan if you have really spectacular credit.
Yeah, because the actual cost to the company, either doing it out of their own cash or if they're borrowing the money to do it, or they're selling the loans and all of that. I mean, you're talking about dirt cheap interest rates. So
yeah, and the margins for really well-run car companies like Volkswagen, for example, their profit margin is about 10%. So really, they want to sell you the car, and they can make the money on the car at this point. If interest rates go up, we may see that shift, and they can try to make some financing money. But right now, there's enough profit in the car.
So they can afford to subsidize In other words, they can let the basically they can eat the interest basically.
Exactly, and they're borrowing at near zero anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that is a key thing to keep our eye on. Anything else on the domestic front?
Consumer sentiment number comes out Friday. We'll see how that falls in line with the credit expansion number that we just talked about. But really, most of what everybody's looking at in the market right now is still out of Europe. You know, we had a nice little break for a couple of weeks from Europe, but this 10-year auction that comes out on Thursday is critical.
Well, and you know, the other thing that we have to keep an eye on, and this is something for our listeners to keep in mind, is we keep talking about Europe and we talk about the problem areas and the areas of concern, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal.
Ireland.
But you know what? Right now, there's another concern that we're going to have to keep an eye on, and that is Germany's economy may have stalled out a little bit in the fourth quarter. So there's an expectation that they may have a pretty tough year, Germany and France, in 2012, that they may not have any type of robust growth to sustain the whole union.
Yeah, they really are dependent on the entire union. We're more isolated, I think, than any. Well, China is probably the most isolated. Our economy is pretty well isolated. But to give you an idea of how volatile the German economy can be, it did grow on an annualized basis of 3% in 2011. Just going back 2 years to 2009, the economy actually shrank a little over 5%. That shows you how dependent they are on import,
all
export,
all
that kind
yeah.
of stuff, yeah.
So I guess the point here is that we shouldn't look to Europe and say, well, don't buy anything over there, but just load up on Germany and France. That's not necessarily the idea here. We need to keep an overall diversified portfolio and can have some investing in those markets, but don't go heavy even in Germany.
Right. Now, but Germany is seen as really the cornerstone of Europe. They actually did a short bond auction earlier this week that returned a negative yield.
That was a 6 month, right?
6 month, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, most eyes are on Europe, and, you know, the best risk barometer to me out there is what's going on in the bond market, because the bond market is smarter than the stock market. 1.9 on a U.S. Treasury 10-year today is an extremely
That means
low
everybody's
number.
Looking for safety
yeah.
still.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
All right. When we come back, we will talk about the warning signs or the ways to avoid raising a red flag when you go to file your tax return.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional, and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 13 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Let's get into some of the red flags that you can throw up that might cause you to be audited by the IRS. Not an attractive scenario. You know, as we get to tax time here, and I know it's coming quicker, it seems like every year, we want to be on the lookout for things that we can do or things that we can be careful not to do. We don't want to inadvertently cause an audit. Nobody wants to be audited. And here are some of the things. I found an excellent website, taxdebthelp.com, and they had a whole long list of really good things that identified red flags to be careful. Number one, don't round your numbers. You know, one of the things that, and again, what I'm talking about here are red flags. I'm not suggesting, that people should try to cheat or play games with the IRS. These are simply things that are known that could cause you to get audited. So don't round your numbers. They know that if the numbers are rounded, there's a higher chance that the person filling out their return may not be using the actual numbers. They might be just saying, well, it's about this. The other thing that can cause a red flag is unreported income. One of the things that a lot of people are not aware of is there's this incredible matching system that the IRS uses where companies are required to send the report to you of your income, but also they have to send it to the IRS. And then if the IRS doesn't see you report it, they've got on the other side of that, they say, well, we've gotten, and this is all done electronically in the IRS's computer systems, we've got this reported income, but you didn't report it on your return. What gives? And This reporting is done by employers, banks, brokerage firms, insurance companies. All of them report. And I remember one time I actually didn't get audited, but I got a little love note in the mail from the IRS that says, "We're showing you got this and you didn't show it on your return." And it was a simple oversight. And I immediately responded with a check and said, "You're right." But they check that. The other big one is sloppy or incomplete information. If it's the math errors or if it's not complete, that can give the IRS heartburn. It might trigger an audit. Charitable donations. The IRS has a good idea based on your level of income and your other aspects of your tax return on what type of range your charitable donation should be as a percentage of your total income. And if it's substantially out of whack, you're a very generous person, that may throw up a red flag, but just make sure you keep all your records of any transactions in case you get asked about it. And here's one. This one kind of bugs me, but it's just a reality of where we are. Earnings over $100,000. And there's another report just came out about people that over $1 million and that they get audited much more heavily. And I there's something about that really strikes me the wrong way. And I don't want to get up on my soapbox here and start preaching, but I think it's a little bit absurd that because somebody makes more, they get audited on a higher percentage. But it's a reality. So if you make over $100,000 a year, there's a much higher percentage chance that you will get an audit. And so that's just the reality of the situation. And again, for those people that make even more, the numbers keep going up. The average audit rate among all people that file is about 1%. And so as you jump up to the higher levels of income, those percentages, though, actually go up. Now, another thing that will trigger a red flag for the IRS is low income for your particular profession. Let's say that the typical person, based on what the IRS has massive databases and they track all this, and if the average person for your type of job makes $30,000 and you report $20,000, well, that's going to trigger a big question mark for them, and that might trigger the audit. And a few other things here. And if you file a federal and a state tax return for your state you live in and the federal return, and if there's differences there, that can trigger an audit because they will check that gets checked. Here's another one that's very interesting, and in particular for small business owners or people that work in sales, is large swings in your income can trigger an audit. IRS kind of has this expectation that there's a consistency to earnings, and if there's large swings in your income reported on your 1099s or W-2s, that can be a red flag. Now, a reality check here is that for small business owners, and I'm one of them, I can speak from firsthand experience that a lot of times business owners can have large swings in income. Things don't go as well. You've got to put money into the business, large swings, and that can trigger an audit. So if you are a small business owner or if you are working in a profession where you have high swings in your income, you better do a lot of good documentation. And then they keep track of tax avoidance transactions. What I mean by that, the IRS works regularly through the court system to try to find any companies that are promoting tax avoidance schemes. And if they're successful, they will get these people that are pitching the tax avoidance programs to turn over all the people that have signed up. And if you're one of those people, guess what? You're going to get a note in the mail that the IRS would like to have an in-person visit with you, and not something you want to have happen. But the statistics are pretty clear. A couple of interesting things I wanted to share with you is that the IRS's budget is $13 billion. Again, a billion with a B. And for that $13 billion, they collected $2.3 trillion in taxes for the government in 2010. Now, here's what was impressive. They processed 141 million tax returns, and they sent out 110 million refunds that totaled $366 billion. So a lot of work, and they have the systems in place to do all of this processing. And so they have these things that alert them to possible non-compliance is the nice way they put it. People that are not following the rules and doing their tax returns correctly. Now, just a final word on the statistics about who gets audited. And I know it's for people that, you know, if somebody doesn't make as much as somebody else, we're like, well, they should get audited. You know, we can sometimes feel that way. but the numbers are pretty amazing for people that make over $1 million. So if you, somebody who gets audited at the lower level, they think they have it bad. People over a million, they, 1 in 8 people over $1 million in income get audited. It reached an all-time high in 2011. And so that's a pretty remarkable number, that 1 out of 8 are, that's the audit number. So a lot of resources are being applied. I'm not sure I agree with it being, you know, the higher percentage for people making more, but they are trying to get that revenue and make sure that we have full compliance and that everybody is paying according to the system.
Do you ever think about the effects inflation will have on your retirement savings? Can you remember when gas was just $1 per gallon? Or when you could buy a house for less than what most cars sell for these days? Is it possible to keep pace with inflation and protect a portion of your portfolio from stock market volatility? A registered investment advisor can show you your options. Certified financial planner David Holland and his team of fee-based investment advisors are ready to help. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit us at www.davidholland.com.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume. It's huge when somebody says, "That job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United.
Go to liveunitedinvolutiaflagler.org. Brought to you by the United Way and the Ad Council.
With so many financial products and services available today, do you ever wonder what the best income strategy is for your situation? Call Holland Financial to receive a free educational DVD on retirement income strategies. Certified financial planner David Holland discusses some of the income planning strategies used by retirees and baby boomers. The DVD is available free of charge, hassle, or pressure by simply calling 888-747-PLAN. Again, that's 888-747-7526.
This is your 2-minute warning.
Okay, 2-minute rundown here. We have a situation that has continued to be an issue in the Middle East with Iran, and there has been this ongoing, you know, escalation of what do you call it? You call it this bantering back and forth, the saber rattling, and there's growing concerns in our country and overseas about a nuclear Iran coming at some point. There is concern about them potentially trying to cut off the flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz. And there's 20% of the world's oil flowing through there every day. And so there's a lot of concerns. And so the thinking here is, if something does break out and become a fight, bullets are flying, there's a war that breaks out, how would that affect us here in the United States? And so I ran across a very good article by U.S. News talking about some of the issues. And here are some of the things that we can be on the lookout for. And there's really a couple of key things. One, a full-out shooting war could be initiated by Iran. A preemptive attack might be made against Iran's nuclear facilities. And, of course, that would probably be by Israel. We could also see ongoing ratcheting and escalation of sanctions, and they just stay in place. Or we might also see a capitulation by Iran on their nuclear program. And so all of these things have varying degrees of possibility. And, you know, everybody's got different opinions about it. But if a war breaks out and Iran really wants to go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger powers here, including the United States, it's not likely to happen. But if it does, there may be a short-term spike in oil, and that could translate to us here, that gas prices go to $4 to $5. But the situation is not likely to come to that. And some of the other things could have a similar impact, where we see an elevated pricing for a while. But at the end of the day, you know, there is a lot of other capacity. Iran contributes about 2 million barrels a day out of 100 million barrels that are used every day. So it's significant, but it's not a large percentage, and a lot of other countries could step in. So do not get too alarmed by this, but pay attention. Let's watch it, and we'll see what unfolds. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for being with me.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.